Mandy Patinkin will perform with the Cincinnati Pops next weekend. If you know this versatile star from his recent work, you might be surprised that a guy who plays Saul Berenson, a serious division chief with the CIA in the Showtime series Homeland, will be singing up a storm at Cincinnati's Music Hall. But that's because you're not recalling his multifaceted career, from award-winning Broadway performances to iconic films, from unique musical recordings to series television. Mandy's here for a conversation with us this evening about what he's up to. Welcome, Mandy.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good to be talking to you this evening. I want to start off asking, have you performed in Cincinnati previously?
Oh, yes, many times. Patti LuPone and I did our concert there for a while, I think for a couple of weeks. And then over the years, I've done various solo concerts. I'm always changing the material, but I've been there for the past 25 years. I've lost count.
Well, Mandy, let's talk a little bit about the program that you're going to be doing at Music Hall. I know you have a number of sort of solo programs that you regularly do. Is this going to be one of those?
It is a solo program, with the exception of the fact that I will be playing with an entire symphony orchestra.
Of course.
My conductor and my regular piano player, Paul Ford. But we're very excited about it. For the past 20-some years, we did a number of orchestra concerts in the beginning, and then pretty much just focused on piano and voice for the past many years. And then somebody said, we've got a lot of places that would like you to come and sing with their orchestra. How do you feel about it? I said, you know what? Let's pull the stuff out of the mothballs and give it a shot. And I called Eric Stern, who's conducted many of my albums with Nonesuch, and he's my dear friend, and he's been working with Paul Ford and myself. So we're heading over there to start the road back up again on the orchestra concert.
Is this then one of your first opportunities to do this with a large orchestra?
It is my first time back with a large orchestra after many years being away from it.
Well, wonderful. Tell me a little bit about the material that you'll be doing then.
Well, we'll be doing a lot of stuff from the very beginning. We'll intersperse it with some new stuff here and there, but we'll be doing things that I sort of gave birth to long ago, in terms of my journey with solo performing. Stuff like the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe, It's Not Easy Being Green. Beautiful song a friend of mine wrote from high school called Mr. Arthur's Place. The Doodle-a-Doo Happy Medley, Rockabye Your Baby, Sam and Cone. A couple of songs from Sunday in the Park with George. A very interesting piece that we do from Music Man. A couple of pieces, some other medleys. The Casey Medley we'll probably be doing, Soliloquy. Probably Over the Rainbow. Probably Buddy's Blues, the Happy Medley. And some Sondheim Always, many Sondheims that I've said, and some others. And then it's always subject to change, but these are some of the things we've been thinking about.
Your concert work has always included a lot of Sondheim, and obviously you had a big opportunity performing in Sunday in the Park with George. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what it is about Sondheim's music that keeps you coming back to perform it?
Well, I consider him to be the Shakespeare of our time. I think he is beyond a genius. The fact that I know him, that he's a friend, that I live in his lifetime, and that I get to sing his material and that's part of the work that I even do, I can't believe it. You know, I mean, I always wondered as a kid, what was it like living in Shakespeare's time? What was it like being part of that company? Well, it was just like this. He writes every word I would write if I was a writer. I'm not a writer, I'm just a mailman. I deliver the songs that these geniuses write, and he is as good as they ever get. Everything pales, as far as I'm concerned, compared to what he writes.
I recall that when he received his Lifetime Tony Award, he was out of the country, and he wrote some words that you delivered on the Tony Awards that evening.
Yes, he asked me to accept it for him, so I did.
That was a great honor for you, I'm sure, too.
Indeed it is. I mean, I love this man, and I also think what he's about, and to some extent what my life's been about, is I think that's what Shakespeare wrote about, too, trying to turn the darkness in our lives into light. And I think that's the palette that he paints from, turning that dark anything into light and being alive.
Do you have a favorite Sondheim song, and will it be included in your program next weekend?
I don't have a favorite. There are so many that speak so deeply to me, but Anyone Can Whistle is one of the great simple ones that he has done. But I have no specific favorite because it's a repetitive theme that he writes about, which is this dark into light. It's always there. Sometimes it's silly and joyous and fun. Sometimes it's more heady and intellectual, more complex. But it's always, to me, the same story about how do I connect and live this life to its fullest? How do I not waste a second of it?
I want to ask you just a bit about roles that you've played that our listeners might be familiar with. I understand that one of your favorite roles was Inigo Montoya in The Princess Bride. Can you talk about why that role particularly resonated for you?
Oh, it was just one of the great times ever. Rob Reiner asked me, would I want to do this? I said in a heartbeat. It said that I was the world's greatest sword fighter, so that was my job. I had to train to become a master swordsman. It was great fun, an extraordinary company, and a script written by William Goldman that was one of the greatest things ever written. Years later, when I said to Rob, because I always try to find one word or one sentence that encapsulates an idea or a project or the role that I'm playing, how would you put The Princess Bride into a single sentence because it has so many stories going on? And Rob didn't miss a beat. He said, oh, that's easy. It's about a little boy whose grandfather comes over to his house to read him a story to tell him the most important thing in life is true love. And when you look at every frame in that movie and everyone's story, everyone's journey from the good guy to the bad guy, from the prince to the pauper, is they're all in quest of true love.
Speaking of good guys and bad guys, more recently you're playing a central role in Homeland, a character a little different from Inigo Montoya. I wonder if you'd say a few words about that role.
I feel so blessed these days. I wonder, am I living on Earth or am I in heaven already? If I indeed get to go to heaven. A group of actors, the likes of which I've never, on a collective basis, such an extraordinary group of company of people. The writers is a pedigree and a collaborative team effort that is amazing. It's clearly hit a nerve. When we read this thing, I knew it was special. When we started making it, we all as a company knew we were involved in something unique, but we didn't know how the public would react if they felt the way we did. And then it came out, and I always use the analogy, it was like meeting the love of your life and bringing that person home to meet your family and coming to realize that they feel about that person the same way you do. It's hit a nerve and a chord across the world. I think it's because it's about family. I think it's about rekindling the lost art of listening. And I think it's a love story like Romeo and Juliet, star-crossed lovers who can't live with each other and can't live without each other. And they're supporting systems or adversarial systems that are all around them. It is an amazing journey. These guys who write it are like novelists. It's written like a novel, and I hope it never ends. It's just one of the thrills of my life. It feeds off current events in the world that we live in, and fortunately for the show, but unfortunately for the whole world, I'm afraid these kinds of events are going to continue in the world and continue to give shows like ours a food system that is never ending until we find a way to make peace amongst ourselves.
Mandy, you seem to be perfectly at home in whatever medium you're working in, be it television or theater or music. Is there one that you gravitate toward more than another, or do you appreciate the variety?
I really love the variety. I'm so looking forward to the orchestra concert, because for years it's just been Paul Ford and myself alone with the lyrics of these great geniuses, the music they wrote with their collaborators or themselves in many cases. But also we're not alone. We're with the audience who enjoy listening to these ideas and thoughts along with us. I like having the company to listen to these wonderful ideas and wishes that these lyricists have left us. And it's great to have company to listen to them. But now we're going to have, you know, all these orchestra members on stage with us, and that's a lot of humanity that adds to the whole picture and the whole evening, which I'm really looking forward to rediscovering. If you told me I could only do one thing, I couldn't do plays, I couldn't do recordings, I couldn't do films or television, I had to choose one, I would absolutely choose the live concert venue. It's always been the most family-friendly, and by that I mean I could schedule it around the family's needs. The reservoir of material is absolutely endless, so you can always find a song that is touching the thoughts or ideas or feelings that you want to express. And I love it more than anything in the world.
I do have one last question for you as we wrap up here. Those who enjoy watching you on Homeland know that Saul Berenson has a rather prodigious beard. Will that be coming with you to Cincinnati?
Yes, it will. I normally shave the minute I finish shooting Homeland, the end of the season, but this year I was filming a movie and I began it with the beard, so I needed it. And I also couldn't finish the movie in time to regrow the beard for Homeland so that they had to buy me with the beard. And then after I finished Homeland, I went right into rehearsal for a new piece I'm creating with Paul Ford and Taylor Mack and the wonderful director Susan Stroman called The Last Two People on Earth, an apocalyptic vaudeville. And we give birth to that in December of this year. I play one of the last two people on Earth along with Taylor Mack, and I'm homeless. And the beard far more unkempt than he is on Homeland, but it seemed to lend itself to one of those last two people on Earth.
Well, that's good news. I want to say thank you to Mandy Patinkin for taking time to talk with us this evening, for coming back to Cincinnati, and for bringing his beard along with him. If you'd like more information about this upcoming date with the Cincinnati Pops, the concerts will be on Friday and Saturday evenings, as well as matinee on Sunday, a week from today. If you'd like more information about the program, you'll find a link at WVXU.org. It's been great to spend time with you, Mandy.
Same here, Rick. Thanks a lot. We'll see everybody next week, I hope.
Okay, I'm sure that the Cincinnati Pops audiences are going to give you a warm greeting.
I look forward to it.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Rick Pender.
Do you hear that whistle down the line? I figure that it's engine number 49. She's the only one that'll sound that way on the Accent Peak and the Santa Fe. See the old smoke rising round the bend. I figure that she knows she's gonna meet a friend. Folks around these parts skip time of day. From the Accent Peak and the Santa Fe, here she comes. Ooh. Hey Jim, you better get the rig. She's got a list of passengers that's pretty big. And that whole world lifts the Browns Hotel, cause lots of them been traveling for quite a spell, all the way from Philadelphia on the Accent Peak and the Santa Fe.